I'd like to introduce Colin Grenfell. Colin's had over 60 years of experience in the actuarial profession and in various industries, predominantly superannuation industry. In that time, he's been very active across lots of aspects of the superannuation industry, but also involved in a number of committees with the Institute of Actuaries, etc., and still has an active involvement in a number. So without further ado, I'll hand across to Colin and he can take you through what I think is one of the actual under-known but biggest risks in the superannuation retirement phase.
Thanks, Gary. And good afternoon, everyone. This presentation is based on research that Gary and I have been doing over the last 2.5 years. As he indicated, we're fairly excited about the results, and hopefully you'll find the presentation interesting and helpful. The challenge of managing sequencing risk in retirement is like driving a car down a mountain. You can safely accelerate up the mountain, but you need to drive differently down the mountain. In the accumulation phase, superannuation saving is like driving a car up a mountain. Pressing the accelerator hard to go as high as possible is a relatively low risk. Accelerating up the hill is analogous to increasing the investment allocation to growth or shares. Sequencing risk is mitigated with long time horizons, new contributions, and no withdrawals. Next slide, you'll need to drive differently down the mountain. In the decumulation phase, retirement withdrawals are like driving down that mountain. Pension payments are akin to a leaking fuel tank. Sequencing risk is like a sharp curve around the side of a cliff that creates a major risk of a crash. You need to carefully apply the brakes to avoid disaster. What is sequencing risk? This definition that I've got here is consistent with what I've seen in most other papers on this topic. It's the risk that your accumulated superannuation savings receive a sequence of the worst returns at the worst possible time, the years around your retirement, and in particular, the years just after retirement, when the account balances are highest and cash flow is usually negative. Investment returns can and do vary widely from year to year. It's the timing of this volatility that makes a big difference as to how much you get to enjoy your retirement. Some terms that you won't find in the literature are what is cumulative decline. With investment performance, cumulative decline is the percentage fall in the relevant unit price over a given period. Now, I'm going to repeat that because if you miss that point, you'll be totally lost for the rest of the presentation. So this cumulative decline is the percentage fall in the relevant unit price over a given period. It's similar to the health cumulative decline, which is what many, myself included, experience when they turn age 80. Note that if unit prices fall between any two dates, then the time-weighted compound average return between those two dates will always be negative. The fall in unit prices is a straightforward and effective starting point to gauge sequencing risk. I think it also passes the pub test. If unit prices fall over, say, 5 or 10 years, that will upset retirees, regardless of whether that fall comprises a long run of negative returns, or probably, more likely, two or more runs of negative returns, partly offset by some intervening positive returns, or sometimes only one significant negative return preceded or followed by one or more positive returns. In all cases, the fall in unit prices quantifies the cumulative decline between the start and the end. It's not of great consequence what happens during the two dates. What is cumulative decline? There are 10 tables in the paper. There are fewer in the slides. The number of occurrences is the number of times the unit price has fallen over one or more integral years. The average cumulative decline is the average percentage fall in unit prices for those occurrences. Since falls result from negative investment returns, the average cumulative decline is recorded with a negative sign. The calculations underlying all the tables do not allow for cash flow, and also the variability of unit prices during quarters may slightly increase the number of occurrences. But nevertheless, the number and average of cumulative declines are realistic and reasonable indicators of the relative sequencing risk outcomes for comparisons over, one, different periods, and two, with different asset allocations. The underlying data that I've used the Osmond historical investment performance data, which is described in a paper I presented to the International Congress of Actuaries in Sydney in 2023. This data is similar to the APRA heat map benchmarks, but it extends back to 30th of June 1959 at quarterly intervals. Table 1 and Table 6 and 8 in part is based on a typical balanced portfolio with 70% growth assets, including 29% of total assets in international shares. Importantly, all results are before investment tax, after approximate imputation credits for the full period, even though in practice it's imputation credits are only applied for some of the period, and after investment fees. So the results should be reasonably realistic for pension and annuity products. The first table. This table is broken into four, and all the tables are broken into four sections. This one's the 65 years to March 25 in the first section, 66 years to June 25, 66 to September 25, and 66 years to December 25. This is a complete table one, but I thought you'd probably have difficulty picking up the font. So what I'll do from here on is I'll break each table into four parts. Some slides will only include part one and part two. This slide is just part one. Next one, Terry. The 31/3/25 results and the 30th of June 25 results on this slide are fairly similar. Now let's go to part two. At the bottom of each slide, I've recorded the compound average return, the standard deviation, the autocorrelation with a one-year lag, and the autocorrelation with a two-year lag. These autocorrelations are important. I'll be referring to them quite often. Next slide. Now we move, look at a balanced portfolio. Sorry, this is part three. I've included part three because I want to draw your attention to the September results. So the September results show cumulative declines extending to 7 years, whereas the previous slides for March and June extended to only 5 years. Next. In this table that you've looked at, there is an average of 11 occurrences of declines occurring over 3 years or longer. These would be worrying sequences for retirees. Negative returns over only 1 or 2 years will be of less concern. They may be of concern, but not quite as bad. Retirees would usually hope to be able to quickly recover from the shorter terms. With a typical balanced portfolio, Only once did a cumulative decline occur over 7 years, and this was just 0.5%. Cumulative declines never occurred over longer than 7 years. Now, in the same format, we'll now look at Australian shares. And we're looking at part one. This covers the same periods as table one. And comparing the number of occurrences with the previous slide, in the above slide, years four and five, there are only three occurrences. Whereas for the balanced portfolio on the previous slide, there were seven occurrences. So they're only small numbers, but 3 to 7 is a big proportional difference. Now, part two. These favourable sequencing results from Australian shares are mainly due to the negative autocorrelations for lags of both 1 and 2 years recorded in the last two lines. In table two, negative autocorrelations are evident for 7 of the 8 recorded autocorrelations. The only one which is positive is shown on this slide in the right-hand corner, 0.55, a small positive. All the others are negative. Table 2 considers the same periods as for Table 1. In this table, there are an average of 8 occurrences of declines occurring over 3 years or longer. These would be worrying sequences for retirees, but they are 3 fewer in number than for a balanced portfolio. With 100% Australian shares, only twice did a cumulative decline occur over 6 years, and declines never occurred over longer than 6 years, which is shorter than 7 years for a balanced portfolio. The prevalence of negative autocorrelations for Australian shares over lags of up to 5.5 years was established in my various ICA papers on Australian investment performance. The significance of this was explained and explored in 3 actuaries digital articles by Kerry Alinas and myself back in January. There were 2 in January 24 and there was 1 in March 24. Again, this is part one only. Now we're looking at Hedge International shares versus Australian shares. Australian shares on the left, Hedge International shares on the right. It should be noted that Hedge International shares, the cumulative declines occur over up to 9 years, compared with up to only 6 years for Australian shares. Also, both the number of occurrences and the average cumulative declines for Hedged International shares, with one exception for each, exceed those for Australian shares. Part two. On the left, Australian shares outperformed Hedged International shares but had a higher standard deviation. However, note the significantly higher Australian shares negative autocorrelation in the first year, left for lag of 1 year. This is the reason for the favourable sequencing results on the previous slide. Part three. Now we're looking at unhedged international shares. And the sequencing risks from unhedged international shares are frightening. They continue on the next slide. Part four, retirees should take note that on the left-hand side for unhedged international shares, cumulative declines occurred over up to 15 years. Also, because of long currency cycles, with only 2 exceptions, both the number of occurrences and the average cumulative declines for unhedged international shares significantly exceeded those for both hedged international shares and Australian shares. Note here at the bottom the positive autocorrelations at lag 1 year for both unhedged international and Australian fixed interest. Positive autocorrelations are a warning sign for sequencing risk for both these investments. Negative autocorrelations are the opposite. International shares, why up to 15 years cumulative declines? These are the unhedged international unit share unit prices during the 66 years ending December 25. The starting price was 8.000. Falls in the unhedged international share prices, I've shaded them on this slide red for 9 periods. Those shaded red are non-overlapping. As indicated by the two green arrows, for 9 years from March, December 68 to 31/12/77, there was one cumulative decline. As indicated by the two blue arrows, for 15 years from December 97 to December 12, there was another cumulative decline. With these two periods, there were many 2 to 14 year cumulative declines within these periods. Also, within the full 66 year period, there are many other cumulative declines which overlap those shown on the slide. When I did this research, it reminded me that back in September 2000, I made my first personal investment in overseas shares. I invested the modest sum of $5,000 in a diversified international share portfolio. Subsequently, I watched year after year that $5,000 disappeared down to $2,500, and it took 16 years before it got back to my original $5,000. That's my personal experience of sequencing risk. Fortunately, I invested $20,000 in Australian shares, so they did a lot better. Now we look at part one. The left section is history. We're now looking at simulated results. The right section is simulated. These results, simulated results, allow for both auto and cross correlations. The results are fairly similar. The main difference is that the simulated results are smoother. They progress more regularly. Part two, again, the left section is history. The right section is simulated and allows for both auto and cross correlations. Average investment returns and standard deviations have been set equal to the 66-year historical results to aid comparison with the first section. The simulated noted numbers of occurrences of cumulative declines between 10 and 20 years are all fractions of less than 0.6 of an occurrence, so they're not significant. Now, part three. The results in the left section of this slide are again simulated results, but now they allow for cross correlations, but I've done the simulations based on zero autocorrelations. The right section shows the ratio of the zero autocorrelation simulated results to the with autocorrelation results on the previous slide. Part four. As before, the left section simulated results have got cross correlations and zero autocorrelations. The right section shows the ratio of zero autocorrelation results to with autocorrelation results. There are no other differences in these simulations. Everything else is equal. The only difference is one's got zero autocorrelation and the other's got a realistic future level of autocorrelations. The very small residual autocorrelations in the simulated output on this slide are due to cross-correlation effects, but they're insignificant. The number of simulated occurrences of cumulative declines over longer periods more than double when autocorrelations are not allowed for. And there is a small increase, with ratios 101 to 124%, in the average cumulative declines. These results are solely due to autocorrelation. This clearly shows that simulation modelling, which does not allow for autocorrelations, significantly overstates sequencing risk for Australian shares. There are 10 tables in the paper. The previous slides have referred to tables 1, 2, 3 and 5. Table 3A, which I don't have slides for, covers Australian property, inflation-linked bonds and government semis 0 to 3 years. Table 4 is interesting. It covers all ordinaries accumulation over 126 years. So with 126 years of data, we're still getting similar results to what I'm showing here for 66 years. The paper's got further details. Table 6 combines Australian shares and cash. Table 7 looks at Australian shares and cash over 33-year periods, shorter periods. Now, the final slides from here will refer to Table 6. The slides will not individually refer to Tables 3A, 4, 7, 8 and 9. Importantly, Tables 8 and 9 are based on real CPI-based rather than nominal cumulative declines. The key conclusions of this paper, e.g. for shares and cash, will hold for both real and nominal bases. However, on the real basis, the relative sequencing risk for direct property is significantly less, but for fixed interest, it's significantly greater. Now we look at combining Australian shares and cash. The right-hand section shows that the 25% cash component significantly improves lessens sequencing risk, both in number and averages. So adding just 25% into cash significantly changes the results. Now look at part two. As would be expected, the right-hand section shows that the 25% cash component reduces the compound average return and standard deviations. Note that all four of the recorded autocorrelations are negative because the left side is 100% Australian shares and the right side still got 75% Australian shares. Part three. Now we're comparing a 50-50 mix on the left side with the typical balanced portfolio on the right side. The left-hand section shows that the 50% cash component has almost completely removed the sequencing risk beyond two cumulative years. Now part four. We're still comparing a 50-50 mix on the left side with the typical balanced portfolio on the right. The left-hand section shows that the 50% cash component reduces the compound average investment return to 9.35%, but this still exceeds the 9.26% for a balanced portfolio. Also, the standard deviation of the 50-50 mix is less than that of the balanced portfolio. Apart from increased one-year cumulative declines in number but not in quantum, the 75-25 combination experienced much less sequencing risk, yet had higher investment returns than a typical balanced portfolio. This extraordinary result demonstrates how the benefits that flow from negative autocorrelations at lags up to about 5.5 years can offset the adverse impact of higher volatility, i.e. higher standard deviations. Similarly, the 50-50 combination experienced less sequencing risk and had lower standard deviation than a typical balanced portfolio, and with an investment return marginally greater than the balanced portfolio. I'm afraid balanced portfolios do not fare well. Now, I realise I've flooded you with lots of numbers, so I sort of try and summarise all the numbers on one slide. Top left-hand side, unhedged international shares, 95 occurrences of cumulative declines over 3 years or longer. Australian listed property, 38. Hedged international shares, 26. And you work your way down and you get Australian shares, 11 for both my data and also 11 for the All Ordinaries Index. Inflation-linked bonds do reasonably well with 6. And the 75% Australian shares, 25% cash, is down to 5. And then 50% Australian shares and 50% cash, it's down to 1. It's virtually vanished. This summary does not show the average cumulative declines, but nevertheless, it's a reasonable ranking of sequencing risk from worst to best. The conclusion from this research is that setting asset allocations in the accumulation stage would normally involve seeking to maximise long-term investment returns, consistent with member volatility risk tolerances, with the latter commonly monitored in the form of standard deviations, and with a watchful eye on liquidity, skewness and kurtosis. However, the research in this paper suggests that asset allocation strategies in the decumulation stage should involve, again, seeking to maximise long investment returns, consistent with the member sequencing risk tolerances, with the latter monitored in the form of cumulative declines, and with a watchful eye on liquidity, autocorrelations and standard deviations. The above recognises that sequencing risk is mitigated by higher levels of contributions in the accumulation stage, but is impacted adversely by increasing levels of drawdown in the decumulation stage. I'd like to acknowledge in particular Kerry Alinas, who's with us today, and David Carruthers for peer reviewing the paper. And I'd like to acknowledge the designers in 1965 of the National Mutual EFG investment system. The unit prices from the EFG system are the foundation of the now 66 years OSMOD database. For those interested in this topic, I recommend you read the full paper. It's, I think, 16 or 18 pages, but it does go quite a bit further than the slides. The slides had to leave out quite a bit of information. If you're interested in autocorrelations, next one, Thierry. If you're interested in the topic of autocorrelations, I suggest you have a look at the first 5 Actuaries Digital articles that are listed there. On a wider topic, my International Congress paper and a paper I did in April 2025, which is a cut-down version of this slide. Thank you.
I'll lad.
Check to see if there's any questions on here. No questions submitted. Has anyone got any questions that they'd like to ask? Can you talk into the microphone, please, John?
Thanks very much, Colin, for a very comprehensive paper. And I understand that it's just a fraction of all the work that you and Kerry have done, you in particular have done on this topic, which is outlined in the other papers. It seemed to me that it might be a worthwhile piece of analysis to do to look at the, if you think of setting an approach that avoids sequencing risk as a form of insurance against disappointment, if you like, on the part of people in retirement mode, you very clearly outlined the risks that are being avoided, particularly with the number of instances of occurrences that have occurred and the depth of the cumulative drawdowns. But the other side of the coin, I think, is the difference in the average return over those 60-odd year period. And I think just based on what you put up there, I think if I'm right, one of the comparisons effectively showed that the cost of achieving that insurance, if you like, the premium you pay for that, yeah, is the reduction in the average return over the period. And in, I think in one of the examples you had there, the average, if I'm not wrong, the average was the average return was reduced by about 1.3% over a long period. And that might not sound like much when you say it like that, but accumulated over long periods of time, like 25, 30 years, that amounts to a significant premium that you're paying for the protection.
I fully agree with you, James. The paper perhaps could have emphasised that more, but I think it's all there. And I hope with an actuarial audience it would be self-evident. This is just a slide that I saw on LinkedIn recently. It's by a financial planner, Ben Walsh, who I don't know, but it shows very similar sentiment to what I've expressed today. He's saying, stop reporting the speed of the car. Start reporting on the remaining fuel in the tank.
Okay, and I think we may, well, we're very much on time. If there's no further, is there any further questions from anyone? Colin, can I just ask you a question? I mean, from looking at this and understanding that you've got a model that does simulations that includes the order correlations as well as cross correlations with sectors and so on, and you see the results that come from that, do you have any thoughts about a lot of the financial calculators that are out there that basically use deterministic type assumptions?
I shudder every time I see a deterministic prediction. I believe that there are ways of communicating the results from stochastic models. I have a personal preference. I'm happy with percentile charts, but I do believe strongly that any percentile chart should show one scenario added into the chart. By adding in one scenario to a percentile chart, you show how over time, a particular scenario will almost always wander between the quartiles. It's not, and it also shows that quartiles, they look very regular, but investment performance is not regular. Investment performance, you'll wander up and you'll wander down, or quickly sometimes. They're my personal thoughts.
Thanks, Colin. Can we perhaps thank Colin in the usual way?